about it. Thanks, Mike. Have a great day. Bye. Hope to see you tomorrow.
Mike Birdie, off he goes. Next, we're going to come back and talk a little football again. I think it's worth mentioning again that deflator.
The deflator.
Is a term used for someone who is trying to gain weight.
No,
trying to lose weight. No. But there's another one that was trying to gain weight. Mr. McNally was trying to lose weight. He's a big guy. But that's what deflator means, and that's why the Wells Report is so off. Now, come on back, everyone. It's going to be funny. Let's talk about it some more. In case you didn't hear at the top of the show, we'll fill you in again on some of the terminology and the context of the Wells Report and the rebuttal. Call us up, 651-989-9105, if you'd like to give us a ring, right here at Radioactive Sports.
Yes.
Playoffs? What are you talking about? Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
I've handled dozens of balls. I have no explanation for what happened.
Unfortunately, Ted Wells, the man that was apparently compensated to put together an investigation and to come back with what he was going to find out about Deflategate and letting air out of footballs, in other words, against the Indianapolis Colts in the AFC Championship game. Well, he came back with more probable than not that could have happened, and something meaning that Brady might have known in general what may have been going on. And that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Tom Brady has appealed his 4-game Deflategate suspension by the NFL, as expected. In doing so, he not only has longtime league nemesis Jeffrey Kessler, who's won a couple of cases against the NFL before. But the NFL has fallen flat in its defense of high-profile appeals lately, and one reason why, they will likely affect that will likely affect the Brady case. Well, it's because of the way the Wells report came back, and he's going to pick it apart. There's no question about it. The Wells report was so weak. And the way that the guy actually defended himself, he came out, and we played that earlier this week. And when he tried to say what he had done, how he'd gone about doing it, he sounded like he had to defend himself. I mean, he was very defensive over the whole thing of being talked about by Tom Brady's agent and all the lawyers and everyone that was going to be shooting this thing full of holes, which they will, by the way. But he was so put out of it that he came out and just said, look, you know, he had a fit. He threw a fit, and we all heard it. And now I think he's probably going to have to do it again, because they're just saying, look, we don't care how big a fit you throw. That was a bad report, and it doesn't carry any weight. We've got plenty of things to go on. No evidence on your part. You're sunk.
No concrete evidence. Obviously, Ted Wells is going on basically the text messages, but at the same time, we don't really know everything that he learned in all the interviews of McNally and Yastrzemski, and there were, you know, obstruction basically of what was going on with the New England Patriots. My question for you, and I don't even know if you know this or not, I know Tom Brady appealed today. Did he appeal, did he appeal to the NFL, or is he taking this to federal court? Because this Kessler, is a lawyer. I believe he was part of the Adrian Peterson deal too, and you bring in the real guns, the real lawyers. When you're taking it to federal court, you don't need a lawyer if you're just appealing it back to Roger Goodell, Troy Vincent, or the Henderson guy, the guy that appealed, handled the appeal for Adrian Peterson. Once that comes back and they say they turn it down because obviously they're puppets of Roger Goodell, that's when you take it to federal court, and that's when Tom Brady's lawyers really do come out and start really gunning for the truth. And I think in a real court of law, they have a case, because as much as we talked about this earlier and have in the past, I want to see Bill Belichick and Tom Brady pay for what they did. I believe they're guilty for what they did. However, the Wells report didn't come up with any evidence, any concrete evidence that proved it. All he came up with were these text messages back and forth. And in the one today that, it just keeps getting, it's Dumb and Dumber 3. It's the Dumb and Dumber 3. It's a sequel to the other two movies, because the lawyers for the New England Patriots today said, oh, about that, the whole deflator thing and the text messages, which is basically the crux of the Ted Wells report. Well, Mr. McNally's goal of losing weight meant that he called himself the deflator. It had nothing to do with footballs. What?
Another guy was there, apparently, that was trying to get up to 200 pounds. Don't even know why his name was brought into it. But the other guy, of course, the deflator. But apparently terminology used when describing weight loss.
According to these very high-priced lawyers, deflate was a term they used to refer to losing weight. One can specifically see this term back in the text message from November 30th from McNally to Yastrzemski, quote, deflate and give somebody that jacket, which, I mean, it's so easy to just take a couple of words and not the entire text. This banter and Mr. McNally's goal of losing weight meant that Mr. McNally called himself the deflator. It had nothing to do with footballs, even though they mentioned football several times, and they mentioned Tom Brady several times, and they mentioned how Tom Brady was upset that the balls were too inflated, and if he thinks that's inflated, wait until we make a rugby ball or a watermelon out of the football next week. I mean, there's no concrete evidence, again, with the Ted Wells report, but you can read between the lines.
He's very defensive about it, though.
Of course,
it's incredible, and it's completely just like, after you read it, you go, well, who cares? It was like someone didn't do anything. It was like everyone just stood still and didn't do a report. He says, well, I think it's wrong to criticize my independence just because you disagree with my findings. That's what Mr. Wells said. He was very defensive.
And I get that part because what Ted Wells said before that was Robert Kraft knew, and so did Tom Brady, they knew he was going to be the independent reporter.
Yeah.
And they were fine with it until it came back saying that, no, you guys are guilty with what you did in the Deflategate situation. Then they became up in arms.
Well, I think when you go out and you get Kessler, and I think his agent, Don Yee, I think they're going to put together a team that's going to shoot it to pieces.
Of course they are.
And they will take it to court. Yep. It won't be back at Goodell. It'll be with an arbitrator or someone in the court system.
And so how long before Roger Goodell is booted from his commissioner spot?
I wonder. Because he's
had the worst year of any commissioner I've ever seen in my life, and he does nothing to help himself. He just continues to go out there and puff out his chest and be like, no, I'm the guy. This is what I do. I'm the commissioner. And before this, he had Robert Kraft, the owner, one of the most powerful owners in the NFL, owner of the New England Patriots, worth $2.6 billion. He was making these guys money hand over fist. Robert Kraft was standing right beside him, right behind him, when anybody wanted to oust him after Adrian Peterson and Greg Hardy, the way he fumbled, no pun intended, the Ray Rice situation. Now there's no Robert Kraft there to help him anymore. Robert Kraft got him the job, and now what we read yesterday, the article, Robert Kraft is out of his mind with anger. How long before Roger Goodell has to fall on the sword?
I wonder. It's a good question.
It's a great question.
Here's the thing. I don't know what he was supposed to do. The best thing he could have done, and we talked about this earlier in the show in the first hour, but when the Wells report came back, whatever you want to call that, if you really want to call that a report, that'd be like sending a 5-year-old to look at everything that he could find as to whether someone let air out of footballs or not. The kid could come back and go, maybe. The kid would come back and just say, I don't know. Hey, can I still get paid?
Yeah.
Hey, give me some bubble gum because I don't know. Could have, maybe not, but could have. And I think maybe Brady knew something about it, too. I'm not sure. Because that's what he came back with.
But it's probable because he's a quarterback and he should know. Well, if there's anybody that's going to know, it's probably going to be him. So, boom, suspended.
But the report said, generally may have been aware of.
But okay, what are you more upset ridiculous. With? What are you more upset with?
But he should have said that's not enough. I mean, Goodell, speaking of Goodell again, the best thing he could have done was that, look, that's not enough. Here's the Goodell report. Here's the Wells report, but I can't go on this. Not to the point where, and he had to. It was the Patriots. It was Kraft. It was Brady. The rest of the league and the rest of the management groups and head coaches are like, let's see what happens here. Well, he hit him pretty hard. He hit him pretty hard.
What happens if Roger Goodell, and we have to take a break because we're running out of time here, but what happens if Roger Goodell said after the Ted Wells report, well, there's not enough evidence to really, I mean, convict is the wrong word, but there's not enough evidence to say Tom Brady deserves a 4-game suspension. I'm going to give the Patriots this because of the obstruction deal, and I was really hoping that they would play along with the situation because this is a serious business. Or just taking a different... I mean, Roger Goodell can't win anyway because of his track record.
It's going to get overturned just the way Tagliabue did it at Bounty Gate.
Sure, but because of Roger Goodell's track record and the way that fans and teams and players and everybody despise him. I mean, he goes up during the NFL draft and everybody boos him incessantly, can barely hear what he's trying to say on a microphone.
He's an easy target.
At what point are the NFL owners going to go, this guy is a joke?
But he's made him so much money. So much money.
He's a commissioner. He's a joke.
Hey, let him negotiate your contract. Let him be one of your team lawyers, but don't put him in as commissioner because he doesn't know. He's in over his head with that. I don't know. But anyway, I do know this. Chris Shad's up next. He's going to talk about the Viking Law. The Viking Law with Chris Shad. How 2015 could go horribly wrong.
What? Why? Why do we got to be so negative?
Well, that's interesting. After what we heard yesterday from Mike Zimmer and everything that Cold Omaha said yesterday. Mm-hmm. Here on this very show, for him, another member of Cold Omaha, 105 The Ticket, says different. Come on back.
People ask what Omaha means. It's a run play, but it could be a pass play.
A run, could be a pass. We don't know for sure. We do know that Chris Shad is standing by with Cold Omaha, one of the writers from 105 The Ticket. Today's subject that we'll be touching on is how 2015 could go horribly wrong.
Oh, good.
That's how great. If something can go wrong, it will go wrong if you're a Minnesota Viking fan.
I would say Minnesota period fan, because as we know, it never really ends great unless it's 1987 or 1991, but which seems like something implodes. But I think Chris Shad is onto something here. And I believe, and Chris Shad said in his article at 105theticket.com, that everybody's kind of less sunshine and rainbows right now about the Minnesota Vikings. And of course they are. They haven't played a game yet. Hoping for the best with Adrian Peterson.
Had with everybody.
Had a great draft.
We're in the running for the Super Bowl.
OTA is coming up. Training camp coming up. Exhibition season coming up.
Patterson looks better. Zimmer said Patterson looks better.
Supposedly, Mike Wallace isn't the biatch that everybody says that he is. Ted Bridgewater continues to grow.
Ted's doing
Nobody's
well.
Really been injured yet, except Brian Robinson already today, straining his pectoral. We don't know how serious that injury is.
He can play with one pectoral muscle.
Yeah, you know, boob. You only need one boob.
That's all he needs. He's a roughneck. Chris Shad, are you there?
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
You all know, right. Pretty doggone good. You know, for us, for a town this size, it's going quite well.
Yeah, good to see you guys have survived all the roads being torn to hell up there. I had to do a little bit of a new job training up in Minneapolis, and I don't think I found a single road that's not torn up.
Well, yeah, you're right, because I was trying to get to, God, I don't even remember what I was trying to get to. Snelling's closed off of 94. I was trying to get down to CHS Field, and there were some things going on downtown St. Paul. I was trying to get to some other place, but it seemed, well, I mean, it's something you get used to here. Two seasons, winter, and road construction. It's just the way it is. Hello?
It's just the way it is.
I said it's just the way it is.
Just like Tupac.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, exactly. Now, you're saying that we're all getting ahead of ourselves. You're saying that, you know, all this goody-two-shoes, feel-good thing needs to stop right now. Let's be realistic. This is still the Vikings. They're in a rebuilding mode. They don't know what Adrian Peterson's going to say or do when he gets back in camp. What's the angle? Where do you think that derives from?
Well, it's kind of like how in baseball, you know, you've been sitting through all winter kind of thinking about the last season, and then all of a sudden you just get this itch around February in baseball season, and spring training hits, you think of warm weather, and everybody gets all confident. And really, this is that time for football fans. After the NFL draft, you have some new toys to play with. Usually Rick Spielman's drafts are filled with guys that people have heard of and have been thought of highly in draft circles. So optimism abounds with the Minnesota Vikings, especially with the way that they played better down the stretch, especially with the way Bridgewater played down the stretch. But there's a lot of questions on this team still heading into training camp. And if they can't get those answered, there's not going to be a jump. They might be around that 500 range once again.
Okay. Chris Shad, Cold Omaha, 105theticket.com. I was hesitantly reading your article, but you're on a couple of things. You're calling this the Vikings law. And Minnesota sports teams have a hard time not imploding, especially the Vikings coming off this year with Adrian Peterson, all the injuries. We get that. You're calling the Vikings law a phenomenon that sees perfect kickers miss field goals with trips to the Super Bowl on the line. It's where a 12th man goes daydreaming and thinks he should be in on a crucial play in New Orleans. It's where a team allegedly had their headsets tapped into and coincidentally loses a game 41-0. Go into five different things that you are worried about, and a couple of things that I think definitely have merit. New receivers. What if they have the same ineffectiveness? Vikings finished 28th in the NFL for passing offense in 2014, even though Stephon Diggs drafted in the fifth round. A lot of people say that they remind him of Percy Harvin. I know that's going a little far. Percy Harvin's a great player. Stephon Diggs is a rookie. He was highly touted, though, and I believe had an injury in Maryland. Mike Wallace coming. He's a speedster. All he does is catch touchdowns long down the field. Jarius Wright, Charles Johnson, Cordarrelle Patterson only going to get better because they're younger, but you're saying that it's probably not going to happen.
You know, there's a lot of question marks with the Viking receivers still. They didn't go out and get a guy that really, you know, would have solidified. Had they had drafted a guy in the draft that could have been a big, huge target for Teddy Bridgewater, I think a lot of those concerns would be alleviated. But as they say, actions speak louder than words. They traded for Mike Wallace. That Charles Johnson's still the number one receiver on that depth chart right now, and he was on a practice squad roster a year ago. You know, he's a size speed freak, but it's also a small sample size from last year. I'm interested to see if he can do it, and especially the one wild card and probably the biggest wild card when you talk about the receivers is Cordarrelle Patterson, who's been working out with a guy known as Hell's Trainer out in California this offseason. You know, he's a hell of an athlete, but he needs to be able to digest a playbook, and that hasn't happened in his first two seasons in the NFL.
Yeah, we also have Jarius Wright, though. We have Mike Wallace. What are your thoughts of Mike Wallace? What do you think he's going to bring to the table?
I think he's a good fit for Norv Turner's offense. Turner wants to throw the ball down the field, and Wallace, he's a deep threat. I mean, he was angry in Miami basically because they didn't let him run go routes down the field all day long. And in Pittsburgh, he averaged about, I believe it was 17.3 yards per reception during his 4 years there. So he's a deep threat. That's something the Vikings haven't had in a long time, really. And if Teddy Bridgewater can get the ball to him, it's going to be a great connection, I think, and really upgrade on the Viking offense.
Talking to Chris Shad, Cold Omaha writer on our website, 105theticket.com. His new article, The Viking Law, How 2015 Could Go Horribly Wrong. You list about five things here. We just talked about new receivers, same ineffectiveness. You mentioned Matt Khalil's career, and these could continue to deteriorate. I mean, these are all things that I don't disagree with. They're all possibilities. Adrian Peterson may not return to the Vikings. If he does, it could be some sort of distraction where he plays with, you know, there becomes a cancer in the locker room. Anything possible. Teddy Bridgewater can't make a sophomore surge. The only thing out of the things that you're talking about, though, here, that I don't see even there being a possibility of even happening, and Superstar, back me up on this if you think that I'm right or wrong on this, but the defense regresses in Zimmer's second year. I mean, they added Trey Waynes, Eric Kendricks, a lot of veteran help, people that have played in Mike Zimmer's schemes before. The defensive line's just going to get better. Everybody's going to mesh a little bit better. I just don't see the defense regressing at all, or that even being a possibility. Do you, Soup?
Oh, I think it's going to. I think it's going to be absolutely a totally different defense in a good way. I think it's going to be kind of a lights out defense as long as there aren't any injuries. That can always happen. But I think we've got a lot of pieces to this puzzle solved. I'm not calling him the steel curtain. I'm not calling him anything else other than a pretty good defense from last year returning under the same system of a defensive minded coach, head coach, with a couple really nice pieces out of the draft. And along with the one that we picked up last year with Anthony Barr, I see some really nice things happening with that defense over there. They finally understand it. They get it. Add a couple new strong players to the mix, and I think you got a really nice unit.
I agree with you guys. The defense does look up and up on paper, but they're dealing with a lot of young players. They're going to have two rookies probably starting. I think Terrence Newman might actually start ahead of Trey Waynes coming out of training camp. But, you know, you got Kendricks at middle linebacker. You got Waynes. You have Barr, who's going to be in his second year. I mean, all these guys have great pedigrees. But, you know, with young players, you don't know how they're going to react from year one to year two. I mentioned Christian Ponder when talking about Teddy Bridgewater in that article as well. He was a guy who played well in his first year and then went in the toilet ever since then. Matt Khalil is another example. So I don't think there's any warning signs flashing now, but once we get to training camp and once we get into those preseason games, there could be a sophomore slump somewhere on that defense that could create a huge hole. Do I think it will happen? I don't think so, but it's definitely possible when you're dealing with young talent.
Oh. Chris Shad, Cold Omaha, new article. Read it. If you dare, call the Viking Law, how 2015 could go horribly wrong. A lot of what ifs, and I think we went over most scenarios. I think it's just a little too early for me to say yay or nay. I guess I'm excited for the team, another great draft, hoping for the best, but that's exactly what your article is about, Chris, is maybe not hoping for the best because there are still a lot of what ifs, but really appreciate it. Always love talking to you guys from Cold Omaha. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
You too.
I mean, there are a lot of this with every team. All the teams are different every year. You either have a new coach or you always have new players.
But when it comes to Mike Zimmer, until he proves me wrong, I don't think the guy can do any wrong, especially on defense.
I agree. I totally agree. I don't see where the youth thing really comes into play either. I think we have some really good defensive players on the defensive line. Greenway, we got a second-year player in Anthony Barr that proved almost everything to anyone that really thought, you know, can this kid play or not? Well, I think he answered that one. You know, Harrison Smith back and healthy. I mean, I granted, probably, you know, it's safety. That could be one thing. But Xavier Rhodes is certainly coming along nicely. I'm not willing to call him a shutdown corner, but I think Trey Waynes will start day one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he'll start day one. And Terrence Newman, I don't know what he brings to the table. He might bring some really and much needed depth, along with Captain Munnerlin and some of those guys.
But I would think Captain Munnerlin or even Josh Robinson would start over Terrence Newman.
Maybe so. I have no idea, but there's a reason he's here.
Of course, there
Zimmer.
Is.
Zimmer knows him.
But there was a reason Chris Crocker was here last year too.
He got
a chance. He helped the secondary understand and digest the defense, the new defense.
Yep.
He's a mentor type of guy.
Mike likes him. That's all it takes.
And if Mike likes him, I love him.
I do too. I think that a lot of really dreadful things would have to happen for that defense to take a regressing downward spike. I don't see it, but I do see this. I see the lottery right around the corner.
Oh.
I see the Minnesota Timberwolves sitting there at 16 wins, making them the worst record in the NBA. So, I also see this. It ain't going to be nothing but luck if we get the first one. Okay, it's just going to be luck because it's a lottery.
Did I ever mention that?
It's a lottery. So let's come back and pick them again.
Should we just keep doing it over and over again? Until Tuesday. Did you know that the NBA draft lottery team representatives are revealed? Any idea who the Minnesota Timberwolves are sending?
I have no idea who it is.
To the lottery? We'll talk about that.
I don't know who it is. But I think that we'll just go ahead and roll the dice again 10 times and give you an exact number. Well, the mean of where we're going to actually draft. Should be around number 4. Somewhere there, 3 or 4. Okay?
Which is so upsetting because they should be number 1.
Yeah, well, we'll find out. Hurry back and find out with us right here at Radioactive Sports.
The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, only on
the 2015 simulated lottery brought to you by
Geico.
By Radioactive Sports. Let's put it that way.
15% or more on your radio sports show in the afternoon.
We're going to roll this bad boy 10 times just to let you people know for sure that only winning 16 games and finishing last isn't going to make any difference.
But first of all,
because it wouldn't matter. We're the most unlucky team.
I hate it that you're right. I hate it that you're right. And it seems to permeate all of the franchises here in Minnesota. We've got the smartest guy on the show, Zach, our intern, working on the history of the representatives for the Minnesota Timberwolves and how they've done.
He's found out who it is.
Well, this year, I mean, we know they announced that today. This year, it's going to be Glenn Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see if Glenn Taylor has done it before, because we talked yesterday. Fred Hoiberg's done it. He brought a little teddy bear or something, like a rabbit.
Like, I don't know.
Really stupid.
It didn't work.
No, it doesn't. It never works. It never works. In fact, the Timberwolves, I'll tell you this, every single day leading up to Tuesday when the actual NBA draft lottery is the Wolves have never won the lottery in their 25 years as a franchise, and the team has never once improved their allotted draft position. Doesn't necessarily matter this year because you can't get much better than number one. They have the best chance of getting the number one overall draft pick. But out of, obviously, 25 years, they haven't been in the lottery every single year, but they've dropped 10 times. They've dropped two spots three times and three spots once.
There you go.
And so we talk Perfect. About this all the time, that the Minnesota Timberwolves have a 25% chance at landing the number one overall pick, but they have like right. a 34% chance at drafting fourth. And so I don't understand why the heck the NBA rigs it that way, whereas you could get penalized for having the worst record in the league. It should be, in my opinion, it should be like the Timberwolves have a 33% chance at number one, a 26% chance at number two, at 17 or whatever equals to 100. Instead, they have a better chance at drafting number four, which would screw them again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
because
we're done.
There are only two players.
The two big guys are gone.
There are only two players, and Flip Saunders can say he likes D'Angelo Russell as much as he wants to. Yeah, there are only two players that matter, and it's the center from Kentucky and the center from Duke, Jahlil Okafor. We don't say Cat on this show because
we say Cat.
We don't say his real name.
Right,
Cat are his initials. I mean, the Kentucky Wildcats. It just fits. We don't want to jinx it because we are so scared to death. We're like battered sports fans.
Very much so.
It's terrible because we're afraid of doing certain things because we just feel like we could have some sort of negative impact on the way that the Minnesota Timberwolves go into this NBA draft lottery Tuesday night.
We don't want to do that. Our teams do a really good enough job of doing that themselves. We don't want to add on to it. So we don't say the guy's name from Kentucky. We call him Cat. So if you're ready, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I can go ahead and just fire up the generator.
Do it.
And I can roll it, and we'll just go ahead and, okay, so here goes.
Hold
number
on.
One.
Hold on a second.
Coo Whip. Coo Whip.
Hold on. Oh, no, that's not.
Coo Whip.
Excuse me?
Coo Whip.
What?
Coo Whip.
What does that mean?
Coo Whip.
I'm looking for this. Here we go.
First roll. The Minnesota Timberwolves will draft number one.
Dang.
Looks like they're going to get a Cat on that one.
Okay.
Number two?
Yeah.
They're going to draft number three.
Yep.
The Knicks will go in front of us, and then the Lakers.
Of course. That's what we talk about all the time. It's always going to be the Knicks. It's always going to be the Lakers.
The two big teams.
The
big city.
The Knicks have the second best chance of getting the number one overall pick, but somehow the Lakers are going to scoot up there. It wouldn't surprise me if the Boston Celtics somehow finagle their way in or something. I mean, it's the beloved franchises of the NBA. I think it's rigged. They do it behind closed doors. They used to do it in front. I mean, you used to see the ping pong balls. Now you don't
do it
anymore.
The ping pong balls.
That's why I think it's rigged.
These guys are actually drafted by way of lottery.
Ready?
That's the stupidest thing. Yeah, here's number three.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. It looks like the Indiana Pacers are going to get it first.
What?
We're fourth. Yeah, we're fourth.
God dang it.
Pacers get the first one. Then Orlando. Then the Philadelphia 76ers. And then the Timberwolves. So there's three.
Who do they have as taking number four? D'Angelo Russell?
I don't know. I don't have that on mine. I must have a different service than yours. Well,
okay.
That's fine. Either
Let's
way.
Go. Number
okay.
four.
Number four. We're number three. Number three. Funny enough, we're behind Los Angeles and Orlando this time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number five. It looks like it's going to be the Knicks, the Jazz, and then at number three, the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Dang it. So, out of three choices, we basically are at 20%. We were number one, number three, number four, number three, number three.
Correct.
And all we, I mean, at, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. We only need to be number one. We'll take number two because that'll get us Jahlil Okafor. In some drafts, number three will get us Jahlil Okafor because if you're the Philadelphia 76ers or teams that don't necessarily need a big man because they're pretty stacked in that position as it is, like the 76ers are, they may take a guard because there are a couple of good guards. We just don't need a guard here at the Timberwolves.
We sure don't.
Number six.
We got plenty of guards. Looks like we're number four here.
Oh, my God.
Sacramento Kings. The Sixers, the Heat, and then the
number seven.
The Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay,
number seven, here we go. Number two, really nice. Number two, right behind the Los Angeles Lakers.
Dang it.
It's kind of us. It used to be. Okay,
there
we go. Number eight. You know what? Funny enough, number two.
I'll take number two.
I would. I really would.
Number nine, roll number nine.
Here we go. Here we go. Number four. Goes Sixers, Knicks, Lakers, T-Wolves. Last roll. You know what? Number four. Your Minnesota Timberwolves will. I hope it goes that way the night of the draft because the first roll was number we drafted first.
Yeah.
That was the last time, too, out of 10.
So out of 10 rolls, 10%, We're running 10%. The Timberwolves are at getting the first overall pick. Correct. Even though they have a 25% chance in real life. It went 1-3-4-3-3-4-2-2. That's okay. I'll take 2.
Yep.
It'll get us to a little Okafor. Mm-hmm. Or 4-4. 4-4.
You do know that most people like Okafor. A lot of people. I don't know why.
No,
they
don't.
But I think they do.
Well, I like Jahlil Okafor. I do. I think he's going to be a decent NBA player.
If you were number 2, you might get Cat.
No, that's not true.
Well, you might.
No. There isn't a single team that wouldn't take Cat except me, maybe. I think every team would take Cat.
All right.
Maybe the Philadelphia 76ers, only because they have Nerlens Noel and they have the other guy. What's the other guy's name, Zach? You're the smartest guy I know.
Who are we talking about?
Philadelphia 76ers, center.
Joel Embiid?
Yeah, Embiid.
I was going to say Moses Malone.
God, get out of here.
All right. We're going to take a little break. Come on back. We got a little time for some more Viking talk. We're going to talk about more of that defensive thing and how we look on offense, too. Youth? I don't see a lot of youth. I mean, I see two or three nice positioned young players that we like a lot. We'll come back and talk about that. Chris Shad sort of brought up something in his article today about if something can go wrong, it will, basically calling it the Vikings law, a lot like Murphy's law. If something can go wrong, it will. Here in Minnesota, we're kind of fall into that category. But he said one thing outside of some things that are maybe true about the receiving, about, you know, Ted Bridgewater coming into the sophomore slump.
Ted Bridgewater.
Or Adrian maybe not coming here at all somehow. He also went on to say that maybe due to the youth and everything on the defensive side of the ball, that the defense could slide off instead of improving, which it did improve quite a bit last year under the tutelage of Mike Zimmer, a really good defensive coordinator in his day and still pretty much in charge of that defense, I'm sure of it. But I'm looking through the roster, and I understand there are some young kids. They're always coming up through, and that's the way you want it. You want a nice mix of some of the veteran leadership along with youth and speed and, you know, that vitality that the youth does bring to it. But, mm-hmm. I see a nice nucleus of players that have been around long enough that they contribute now, and they know what they're doing out there. In fact, a second-year player like Anthony Barr, I mean, he knows. He knows what's going on right now. He's a great athlete. Why would he take a step back? So, I mean,
Always possible, but I think it's more probable with the quarterback position, really. Don't you? I mean, there's so much pressure, and then now there's tape on a particular player.
Yeah.
You know, the other teams know their tendencies, what to look for, whereas last year these teams kind of were going in blind almost.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Ted Bridgewater was continuing to progress every single game. I've never seen, and we talked about this last year in the postgame, the Vikings postgame show that we have right here on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket, literally watching a player grow with that kind of progress every single game was the most unique thing I'd ever seen.
I think so, too. I mean, I think the guy just wouldn't quit. You know, the game was slowing down, even though everyone around him was falling, you know, to injury. He was losing players that he had to have out there. I mean, as a rookie, you want everything. Number one, Castle went down to give him the spot that he was already beaten out of fair and square. Castle beat him out in training camp. He did. And he was willing to sit behind Castle and do exactly what he was supposed to do and learn. And that's what he does well. Well, he gets thrown into the mix. Now it's live go, live rounds. Bullets are flying, right? People are also falling down all over the place. And so he ends up with a makeshift offensive line about every week. He's got a tight end that goes down. He's got a receiver that decides he doesn't know where he's at on the field in his second year.
Hence, I think, why Chris Shad was bringing up the second-year slump. I mean, RG3 went through it. A lot of rookies have gone through it their second year. They call it the sophomore slump. Yeah, it's normal. Right. Well, and Cordarrelle Patterson may have had the worst in Vikings history last year. I mean, they didn't trust him at all. They completely just took him off the field.
33 receptions. And as Chris Shad also mentioned, Charles Johnson, who did come in, was a practice squad player with the Cleveland Browns the year before for Norv Turner. Mm-hmm. So he came in. They signed him, and he jumped right into the starting lineup, and Cordarrelle lost his starting spot. That's all there is to it. And Cordarrelle only ended up with 33 receptions last year. 33 catches.
And see, that seems high. Like, it seems a little high to me because he was so abysmal. And like I said, they took him off the field. I said, you can handle kick returns. That's about it. Yeah, and then every week it seemed like, if I don't get to see the field, I'm going to have a talk with Mike Zimmer. And then next week, you didn't see the field. Did you have a talk? Well, the next week, if I don't see the field, and then they finally did have a talk.
Well, Mike kept saying, yeah, we've had a talk. He doesn't talk with me or come up to me. I talk to him.
Yeah.
I go talk to him.
Of course he does.
And it was because he needed talking too. But some of that you thing, there isn't that much of it. Brian Robinson, who, by the way, a pec injury today, not supposed to be serious, but Linval Joseph and Sharif Floyd, Everson Griffin, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, young guy, Chad Greenway, Terrence Newman, Robert Blanton, Harrison Smith, Xavier Rhodes, and Josh Robinson. I mean, those are players. And add to that, you know, the Trey Waynes. So, anyway, that's the defensive side of the ball.
The only position, really, that has, I would say, a position battle would be safety.
Agreed. Agreed.
Everything else seems to be set.
I mean, that's going to be a battle. And I like Blanton to hold his own on that, but they brought in some players. Who was it that they brought in? Oh, I like Exum, too. Taylor Mays might be the guy, though. You never know.
Man.
You never know. I mean, he can play both.
I've liked him out of college. He was a second-round draft pick, but he just hasn't seemed to stick on anywhere. But he, I mean, I think that they brought in, I've never seen the team bring in so many special teams players. Free agent special teams players in one season. Taylor Mays, Casey Matthews.
Matthews, yeah.
Those are two pretty good gunners, I would think.
I hope so. I sure hope so. And our teams are pretty good anyway, but can always use another good player.
Of course.
A cover guy. Next up, we're going to head out to the horse track.
Oh!
Johnny Love. He's a horse handicapper for the Star Tribune. And I live out there by Canterbury. I love to go out to the horse races. Beautiful evenings out there. I love it, man. I love it.
Would you believe that I've never been out there?
It's fun.
I'm going this year, and
it's
I'm taking
fun.
You as my date.
Hey, why not?
I mean, you can have your wife meet us out there or whatever if you're afraid.
Sure.
If you're afraid of being having
no,
a long
not.
Time with me.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm fine with it.
Okay.
And so we'll do that. But Johnny Love joins us, and maybe he'll handicap you and I. I don't know. That may not be a good pairing. We'll do that next at Radio. And they're off. Yeah, I mean, that's how I would start it. And they're off. Okay, we got a long ways to go here, everybody. But, I mean, they just let them out of the gates. I'll let you know when they're back.
Oh, my God, somebody just pooped.
Yeah, you know
because
what?
Because you know they poop. They don't care
well, of
if you're running a race. They're just going to poop. When they got to poop, they're going to poop.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes on the run,
yeah.
It could be awfully hard to do. I've tried it. But it doesn't go well. Enough comedy jokes. Johnny Love, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Johnny, it's fun out there at the racetrack. I love Canterbury. I love it. And, it's the live music out there. Grabbing one of your favorite beverages, going outside sitting down or inside sitting down, and just watching the horses. It's fantastic. And you, sir, I'm going to be listening to you and following your every move when it comes to handicapping these horses. I love to. Who else? Oh, there's two or three other guys out there that I loved. Gorg is a very good handicapper, too. I used to like to follow him, too. But, Johnny, how long have you been doing this?
It's my fifth year with the Star and Tribune. So, you know, each year gets better at Canterbury, too. So since they did the Mystic Lake thing, I think you were there prior to that. And it was a little slow back in the days, but the last 3 years, it keeps getting better and better.
Johnny, I love it out there.
I'm a rookie. I haven't been out to Canterbury. I drive by. I mean, it's so far. When you live in the city, and I say it takes like 3 days to get to the superstar Mike Morris's house, who lives down in that area. Mm-hmm. Honest to God, it takes like 3 days. I mean, I'm a city guy, but to get out there, it's fantastic because I think it's, what is it, Thursdays, you have cheap drinks and cheap this and cheap that. And obviously, I'm in radio, so I don't have just tons of just expendable income. But when I do go out there, and obviously when we talk to you, I'm gonna need like a cheat sheet because I like to win money.
Ben, I live in the city, and it takes me a haul to get out there during rush hour traffic, especially if I'm doing a selection show.
Yeah.
But I tell like young
it.
Guys at the gym, on a Thursday night is one of the best nights to go out there. You see a lot of nice, good-looking people having their dollar beers and hot dogs and playing the horses. They draw about 14,000 people. It's better than going to a dance club.
I don't go to dance
Friday,
clubs. But so you're saying that I could like procreate with another like a beautiful woman down there? I could like find somebody to make a baby with?
I think it'd be rude not to.
I think you're absolutely right, Johnny Love. Big week in racing,
man.
Though. The Preakness, obviously, we had the Kentucky Derby a couple of weeks ago. Who was the winner of that? American Pharoah?
American Pharoah.
Yeah. What are the chances that American Pharoah can win the Preakness in obviously going for the Triple Crown?
Well, you know, he was my top pick for the Derby, and I like him Saturday. To be honest, it's not that exciting of a field. We only have 8 horses. I think the 3 top runners in the Derby are your 3 runners for the Preakness. I don't see any new shooters coming in. I'm staying with American Pharoah. You know, for such a talented horse, there's a lot of people questioning him after he drew position 1 on the rail. I don't see that being a big deal. He won the Del Mar Futurity starting from post 1, and he won by 4 lengths. It could rain on Saturday. Good chance of rain. Well, he ran well in the slop. He ran 3 races back in the Rebel Stakes, won by 6 lengths. He didn't have the better of the trip of the other 2 horses, Dortmund and Firing Line. He actually ran 8 lengths farther than Dortmund, who ran 3rd. And he's starting on the rail, so the fastest way to get the wires from point A to point B. I think the rail position is going to help him out a lot this race.
Johnny Love, horse handicapper for the Star Tribune, talking about Canterbury and talking about the big races as well. But how accurate have you been? Have there been numbers or percentages of people who've come up to you and that you've kept track of through the years who have said, you know what, your numbers are spot on. I mean, I won some money because of you.
Well, you know, it's a thankless job. Because if someone wins with a ticket of mine, they're not going to say, I hit Johnny Love's ticket. They're going to say, I hit. And that's just part of the game. But, I made some good money at the Derby, but my 2 tickets in the Star Tribune, I put 2 trifecta tickets out, and they both hit. That was kind of nice to get some emails and phone calls from a few people. Because it doesn't happen very often, Mike. It just does.
Yeah.
But in the Star Tribune, so the following day, as it comes to results, they put my percentages in for best bets and how I'm doing throughout the year for all my totals. So people can see it, you know.
Sure.
Wow, Johnny, what would you say for a guy like me who is a city boy or doesn't necessarily, I mean, I like watching the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and obviously the Belmont if there's going to be a Triple Crown. I'm into beers on Thursday nights. I'm into cute ladies and their little sundressy type things as well. But other than Thursday night and horse racing, why is it exciting for a guy like me to get involved in and to bet money and on all these things? Just because I'm brand new at it. I have no idea what horse racing is all about. I like petting the horse's nose. It's so soft, you know, when they do that.
Yeah.
And I like giving them peppermints and stuff like that. But
that
I just don't understand horse racing.
Well, it doesn't make you a bad guy for doing that. But, you know, I think we're very fortunate to have Canterbury here. There's no age restriction to go to the horse races. You can go out there without playing. You know, there's music going on. There's a lot of family events going on Sunday. I have 2 small boys. I never feel like I got to worry about a couple of rum dumps coming up to them being drunk and stupid.
Until I get there.
Love it out there.
Yeah.
It's a very family, it's a big family atmosphere, and that's one thing about Canterbury Park, because I've been to tracks across the nation. There's a lot of tracks where you don't even want to count your money out in public.
That's probably true.
Take your kids to it. Canterbury's totally different. You know, this year they're going to break a record as far as purse money, $14 million.
Wow.
So we're getting better horses, better trainers, so that's going to attract more people. For a guy like you, like I said, Thursday nights are the night that you would want to go out there and try to get lucky with the horses or with the ladies.
Right.
But it's a fun time, and it is a little bit of a haul. But like I said, we're very fortunate to have them here because there's a lot of horse tracks that haven't done very well. Kentucky Derby, they'll show that a lot of people are wrong. It broke their records for attendance on TV, attendance there, money pools. So I think we're in something good here. We're very lucky.
Yeah, I love it out there. I mean, you're right. My kids love it out there. They go out there and make the $2 bets, and they do the bet. Down at the paddock. Just looking at the horses and petting them like Ben.
Can I test your noses?
Yeah, you can.
Maybe, I really can
maybe
touch
not.
Little noses.
I don't think so.
Johnny, can I?
Are you talking fillies or horses?
I like horse's that. Nose. This is my favorite part. I just love
it. You come with me. I'll get you up close.
Thanks, man.
There you go. You're all squared away. Thanks. Johnny Love, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Best of luck this weekend. Canterbury Park opens this weekend. Tomorrow.
Canterbury Park
opens tomorrow. Can't wait.
And my picks for the Preakness in Kentucky for Canterbury will be in tomorrow's paper, by the way.
Nice. Sounds good. In the Star Tribune. Johnny Love, always love having you on. You get me excited for horse racing, whether it be for the real horses or the fillies. Human beings or horses, whatever it is. I love them all, and I love it because of you.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me back.
See ya.
That's how it goes. I love it out there.
Funny.
I really do, man. He's funny. He gets it.
I love him.
And you talk about some relaxing summer evenings out there. You know, the lights are on and a few bugs, but no matter. It doesn't matter. When you have beer, it doesn't matter.
Can I stay over at your house if I go down there?
Sure. No trouble. Because, okay. I mean, it takes 3 days to get back home. I wouldn't want you to
It takes forever. How do you make... I mean, seriously, you have to... I mean, if you're going to come to work tomorrow, you better leave yesterday.
No. I have a car. You've got a covered wagon.
Oh, that's the difference.
That's the difference maker. Yeah, so, I mean, you can plan on things when you have a car.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but that's the way it goes. We have the sillier side of sports, as if that wasn't enough. And then we have a true superstar to end the day and to send you off for your little dinner. Do that next.
On the phone that said, once you get to 494 and 169, it's just 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I said, well, to Canterbury.
Right.
But I said, well, it's the part of getting to 494 and 169 that takes forever.
Well, yeah.
That's the problem. But no, I mean,
that's where 2 days are spent.
I know. And I say, and I obviously say a lot of things in jest. I'm just kidding that it does. Obviously, I know it doesn't take 3 days to get down there. But just being a city guy, it's like, you know, getting out to the suburbs, being in the middle of everything, it takes a while.
It does take a while.
I've known people up north in Andover or Anoka, Blaine. I know people out in Woodbury and Cottage Grove. I have friends out in Wayzata and Plymouth and Minnetonka.
Oh, sure.
And I say the same thing about everything. I have a lot of family that lives down in the Chaska, Shakopee area. I say the same thing.
It's nice thing of the woods.
When you're isolated by the city.
Oh, yeah. You feel like...
I don't need to go anywhere.
I'm breaking out, and I'm off on my own now.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a big world.
I feel like Lewis and Clark. Sillier side of sports. You ready for some of this?
I'm going to venture off into the southern suburbs.
I love the south, especially the southwest.
Me too.
Spent a lot of time there. I have a lot of family out there. It's my favorite part of the city. Sillier side of sports. Adrian Peterson had and a friend stopped into the Flying Pug Bar in Houston.
The Flying Pug.
I have a pug.
That's a dog, yeah.
It's funny. The Flying Pug Bar in Houston on Sunday night for a few drinks, and the running back, Minnesota Viking running back, reportedly purchased a shot of vodka for everyone inside the bar.
Oh, how nice.
I don't know. I know you have drinks. Zach, I don't know if you drink. Zach, the intern here, is sitting in with us today. Yeah. Do you drink any alcoholic beverages?
I have, yeah.
Do you have drink? Are you of age?
I am. I'm 22.
Okay. Oh, you're 20. That's right. You said that.
Plenty old.
Of anybody that drinks booze...
Yeah.
Shots of vodka are like the last thing that you'd order. Have you ever heard of people just doing shots of vodka?
No, but they have so many new vodkas out there now.
Sure, that makes sense.
And tequilas and everything else, but the vodkas are like, there's always a celebrity behind a new bottle of vodka. I think Puffy's got a new one out.
Sure, I guess that makes sense if it's like root beer vodka or something like that. But the only people I know that did shots of vodka were like the girls back in the day of college when they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to get drunk off the 7.55 Kamchatka vodka or whatever it was. The cheapest possible, quickest possible way. But, I mean, there are so many other things.
Oh, yeah.
So many other concoctions. So many other, I mean, tequila. I guess gin would probably be worse, taking shots of gin.
I like some gin, though.
I like gin, but taking shots of it.
Does Timberlake have a new tequila out?
Who?
Timberlake. Who's Justin Timberlake?
Who?
Yeah. Him.
My God, you disappoint me some days.
Well, I think he's got a new vodka out. No, I think it's tequila, though. I'll check that out.
Tequila. Now we're talking.
That's what I said.
Former Miami Dolphin wide receiver Chris Chambers told the Miami Herald yesterday that several teams are interested in Mike Vick, who was benched in favor of Geno Smith with the New York Jets last season, adding, quote, he wants to play 3 more years. Eventually, he wants to start again. Well, as a football fan, me personally, I'd always be intrigued to see a healthy back-in-the-day Mike Vick because remember that time when he ran for, what was it, a 78-yard touchdown or something against the Vikings at the Metrodome? He was an unbelievable player back in his heyday. Then it came out that he was murdering, hanging, suffocating, drowning dogs, electrocuting them, had a dog ring, went to prison for a long time, came back, never really the same guy.
No, he was involved with some doing some very, very bad things. He did some time for that. He did 2 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, you want to talk about an athlete? You know, coming out of school, that guy was. He could throw the doggone thing 100 yards, I swear. I mean, he could throw it 100 yards. He just had a grenade launcher.
I just don't foresee him starting fast for a team unless it's a team that has a miserable quarterback situation. Just looking at the NFL helmets that we have here on the back of the wall, is there any team Michael Vick could start for right now?
Are there teams
that would pay Michael Vick? Because, I mean, despite the fact that he's played with Philadelphia and they're several years removed and he speaks about anti-dogfighting and he does a lot of good charity work nowadays, there's still that negative stigma going around with Mike Vick. And so whatever team signs him is going to have to deal with PETA and with all these protests.
I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, not as much as it was, but I mean, because he's played several years, but maybe Andy Reid would let him back in with Kansas City. I don't know. As backup.
They have Marcus Mariota, Blake Bortles for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They wouldn't do anything with him.
I think maybe he'd have to play for a coach in an offense that he's already been in. I just don't think he needs to go. I don't think Michael Vick is going to have that much football left if he has to go to a new system, new coach.
I mean, there isn't a single team that I'm looking at right now that could.
Maybe KC.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Alex Smith. I can see him actually doing something with Andy Reid still.
Or Cleveland.
See, I thought Cleveland too, but since Johnny Manziel's come out of that's Zach, by the way, our intern. Cleveland is becoming turned on again by Johnny Manziel. Ever since when he went to rehab for his addictive behavior, he's been on his best behavior.
That's what I've been told.
And they like what he's been doing in these mini camps that they've been having. That's an interesting situation.
Joe Thomas, their all-pro left tackle. Can't say enough about him. He's a different person completely, I guess.
Good for Johnny Manziel.
Maybe Michael Vick could end up there. I don't know.
Yeah. Huh. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones said the running game will be better than last season.
Okay.
The guy's a nutbag. This is obviously sillier side of sports.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
you remember they had a guy by the name of DeMarco Murray. He led the league in rushing last year. He's now in Philadelphia, by the way. Here's what Jerry Jones said, quote, "When you say the entire running game, and that would be including our tight ends, including fullbacks, and the entire game, we're better. We're better.
Well, okay. How about your running back?
Well, the Cowboys' current running backs are Darren McFadden.
Okay.
Ryan Williams.
Okay.
Joseph Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Dunbar.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Wait, is DeMarco Murray still on that team?
No.
Oh.
He plays for the much-hated Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, didn't they pick up Adrian Peterson, though?
No. Okay. I didn't do that.
Well, the tight ends are sure good, and the fullback is sure good. The offensive line certainly is good, and they also have Lael Collins. So they just got better, too. But three of those guys up front made the Pro Bowl.
Sports fans in general do a lot of crazy things that they probably will regret later. Fans are fanatics about their teams. I know you have tattoos. I have some tattoos. Sure. Would you ever be this? I've seen a lot of fans do awful tattoos showing their pride for their team. But this guy from Denver, he's a Broncos fan, absolutely wins the award for worst sports tattoo idea ever, though I'm thinking about doing it.
Well, let's just take a look.
It's the Bronco head tattooed on the inside of his bottom lip.
Inside of the lip. I got to think that.
Will you get an inside of the bottom lip tattoo if I get one? Can we do it together?
No, I don't want one. Can have one.
Well, I don't really want one either, but I'll do it if you do it. Why would somebody get it in the inside of their lip? Unless you pull it out and show people, nobody's going to know that it's there.
I don't think anyone really wants to see it there. I know that I don't. I don't know if I want to go through the experience of getting it either.
Imagine that would hurt
think that would be fun to have it there. And the healing process.
And to taste ink in your mouth.
Equally not as fun. Oh, yeah. I mean, some people are out there, but that is just gross. And, of course, it's a gross team, too. It's the Denver Broncos.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the Denver Broncos.
They're horrible. I hate them.
What? Why?
The AFC and they're the Broncos.
There's nothing wrong with the Broncos.
Nothing. I don't like anything about the Denver Broncos.
I love the Denver Broncos. They become America's team. I mean, I grew up, obviously, in Sioux Falls, South Dakota after being born in Mankato, so I can go to the courthouse and get my Minnesota birth certificate. But out there, they play the Vikings and the Broncos. Those are the teams.
I'm sure.
So I grew up loving John Elway because that would be the 3 o'clock game after I watched the Vikings at noon.
Yeah, I hate them.
Love them.
Yeah, I hate them. But they're AFC. Sorry. I played for them for a while, too.
Did you?
I actually went through a summer camp with them in 86.
Wow.
I did, 86, with Dan Reeves, John Elway, yeah. The whole bunch.
John Elway put his fingers in your butt?
No, I asked him, you know, how he passed one day, though, and he said, well, I can't say the word, but he just kind of walked past me and said, crappy, but not crappy.
Sure.
Yeah, he just didn't
That's
have
the only
didn't
thing
have
John Elway ever said to you.
No, I mean, we talked, but he was full of himself.
Horse's ass. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Surprised me.
Horse's ass, horse teeth, playing for the Broncos. Yeah. I mean, he lived up to it.
Anyway. I'd like to start out this press conference with a thank you to John Fox.
Uh-huh. One more thing real quick. The New England Patriots have been talking about Deflategate, and it just continues to get sillier by the day. This new thing that came out in response to Ted Wells' report, this from the New England Patriots, quote, evidence was also provided that Indianapolis ballboys in a prior season had been seen in Jacksonville by Jacksonville personnel with ball needles hidden under their long sleeves. So they're trying to deflect. Instead of deflate gate, it's turning into deflect gate.
We've seen this happen before. Yeah, I, whatever you can make up, it's all good.
Sounds
right
like
now.
They're a
it's all good. Whatever you can find now.
I didn't do it, but Johnny did the.
You
should
have seen this.
First.
And the people that are accusing us actually was doing that too. We saw their boys with needles.
Idiots. Join us tomorrow, Superstar Mike Morris and I, 4 to 7. We have free Twins tickets, free parking in the back of the Office Pub and
the
Grill.
The Office.
4 to 7 before the Twins game down on Washington. The Office Pub and Grill. We'd love to see you out there.
Absolutely, and great TV. So you don't have to go over the game. If you don't want to, you can, but certainly you can stay
great
back with us
specials.
And just watch and watch TV there, too.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Take me home.
Navy Lieutenant Florence B. Coe is my true superstar. She was 35 years of age from El Cajon, California. She died March 27th when Afghan National Army soldier opened fire on personnel assigned to Combined Security Transition Command. This is Afghanistan camp there. Also killed was Navy Lieutenant Francis L. Toner, IV. But she was what a beautiful woman, a great soldier, too. So we thank her for her service. She gave her life for her country. Navy Lieutenant Florence B. Coe is my true superstar. Remember her, please. Good night.
In the cold, cold ground.